I'd like to turn your attention this morning to Matthew chapter 14. We're going to look at the account where Jesus walked on the waters. This is, of course, a very familiar account, I'm sure, to all of you. Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14. As we go through here, there's many lessons that we can bring from this, but I want to focus primarily on Peter's prayer to the Lord at this time. But we'll begin in verse 22 and we'll read through 33. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit," and they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water." And he said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, "O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, "Of a truth, thou art the Son of God." As I said, there are many lessons that we can take from this account, and many have preached on this in the past, and this will no doubt be the first message you've heard on this, and will probably not be the last. Some might look at this and they say, well, the overarching theme of this is that Jesus is with us during our trials. They'll say that the winds and the waves were a trial to Peter, and this is proof, or this is another account where we can look to the lesson that Jesus is with us during our trials. And you know, I think that's probably applicable. I think that's something we can take from this here. And certainly that's something we rejoice in, isn't it? That we have that friend that sticketh closer than a brother. The one that we can cast all of our cares upon because he cares for us. One that is right there by our sides even in the most despairing times of life. And some might look at this and they'll say, well, another lesson we could take from it is that God is bigger than our problems. Peter obviously had the problem here with the winds and the waves, but God is bigger than those problems. Well, again, that's something that we rejoice in, and that's another lesson I think that we can take from this. That we, as we've said in the past, have mentioned, God is able. There's nothing too hard for the Lord. The one that spoke this very world into existence has all power, and there's nothing that you're facing in this life that is too hard for the Lord. There's no task too large for him to undertake. And some might say, well, maybe another lesson from this is that doubt limits faith. Peter had faith here. Christ says, "O ye of little faith," but he displayed faith. But yet, his faith was limited because of doubt. You see, doubt and faith are mutually exclusive. You can't have both to the greatest extreme. Either you have doubt to a great extreme and very little faith, or you have faith to a great extreme and very little doubt. And so they're mutually exclusive. And I think that's something that we can take from this. But I think the biggest and the most overarching theme and lesson from this account is that one that doubts the Lord, one that looks away from the Lord, one that stops trusting in the word of the Lord will be overcome by circumstances. In other words, circumstances can and will overtake a person if they are doubting, if they're not looking to the Lord, and if they're not trusting in him. That's exactly what happened to Peter here. He was being overtaken by circumstances, wasn't he? The winds and the waves were taking him and dragging him down into the sea, if you will. You say, well, Brother Nathan, why is that? Why did that happen? Well, we don't have to speculate as to that. In verse 31, Christ asks a question, "Wherefore didst thou doubt?" Peter was doubting. He had faith, but he also had doubts at this time. And rather than keeping his eye fixed upon the Lord, he was looking to the winds, he was looking to the waves, he was looking to these circumstances at this time, and taking his eye off the Lord and stopped trusting in His Word. You say, "Brother Nathan, how do you get the trusting in His Word part out of here?" Well, remember as we read that Peter asked him, said, "If it's you, then tell me to come." And what did the Lord say? He said, "Come." You know, the Lord's never going to tell us to do something that we can't do. The Lord's never going to tell us to do something that He won't help us accomplish. So this commandment of the Lord to Peter in coming is, I believe, a word of the Lord, a commandment of the Lord. And Peter just stop trusting that the Lord was going to be with them in this. Even though He said, "Come unto me, come out on the water, be with me," he stopped trusting. Rather, he started looking to the circumstances of life. Well, dear friends, the message of the Bible is that a person can be blessed mightily regardless of the circumstances in life if they continue to trust in the Lord, if they look to Him, and if they don't doubt Him along life's way. You can look to several verses of Scripture that would bear this point up. In Hebrews we read where Paul says, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith." You know what Paul's writing about there is spiritual endurance. Have you ever had a time where you just feel spiritually drained? Have you ever just felt like, "I just can't press on any longer. This is just too much for me to do"? Well, what Paul is saying there is if you keep your eye fixed upon the Lord, looking to Jesus, then in doing so, you're going to be able to set aside the sins and the weights that so easily beset you, and you're going to be able to run with patience a race that is set before you. That is, you're going to have a measure of spiritual endurance in this life. You're looking to Jesus. Not only that, but we find Isaiah says that "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on Thee, for he trusts in Thee." Again, that's a great benefit to the children of God. Have you ever had a time where you're just spiritually and mentally confused or unstable? Have you ever had times where you just feel as though you're being tossed to and fro? Times when you just feel like, "I have no stability in my life." Well, the Lord's saying that if you keep your mind fixed upon Me, I'm going to do away with that. I'm going to keep you in perfect peace. You're looking to Me. You're trusting in Me. Or maybe you've had times you say, "I just don't know which path to take in life. I just don't know where to go from here. I need some wisdom in my life." Well, again, what do we find in the Word of the Lord? It says in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, "To trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct thy paths." You say, "I need a little bit of direction for my life." Then stop looking at the circumstances of life and start looking to the Lord, acknowledging Him and trusting Him. Stop doubting Him. You see, there's a great benefit to the child of God that has that mentality. I'll give you one more for time's sake. The 112th Psalm in verse 7. We find there written, "He shall not be afraid of evil tidings. His heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord." He shall not be afraid of evil tidings. That's bad news. How many of us are afraid of bad news? How many of us fear bad news? Maybe in a sense of health. Either we ourselves or somebody we know has gone to the doctor and gotten a bad report. They say, "There's just nothing we can do for you anymore. The tumor is inoperable. There's just nothing that we can do for you. Medical science has reached its limit." We fear that news, don't we? We know people who have had that news. They fear that news. We fear the news of death. How many of us have known somebody that has lost a loved one? And oh, how that must have been a fear to them to just know that someday that phone call is going to come, that their loved one or their friend has passed away. They're fearing that evil tiding. Well, dear friends, the message of the Bible is that we have an immunity to fear if we have our heart fixed upon the Lord, and if we're trusting in the Lord. It doesn't matter what the evil report is. Maybe it's one of public calamities. Maybe it's one of a terrorist attack. Certainly we don't rejoice in those news reports. Certainly those are news reports that we fear. Or the report that we've lost everything. Our stocks have plummeted, or we've lost our job, or something to that, and we've lost all of our substance in this world. We fear those things. We fear the spiritual evil reports that may come upon us. Or the news that a church has closed its doors. What about that? Don't you fear that report? There's nothing that makes me more sad than to hear of a candlelight or a candlestick that's been removed. Or one that's had to close its doors for obvious reasons. We fear those reports. But dear friends, again, the message of the Bible is one that is where a person is not doubting the Lord and they're trusting in His Word. And they're looking to Him. What do they have? They have spiritual endurance. They have peace of mind. They have clarity and wisdom for life circumstances. And they have an immunity to fear. And so you say, well, which class would you rather be in? I think that's pretty obvious. I'd rather be in the one that's trusting in the Lord and reaping all of these benefits. I don't want to be like Peter here, doubting the Lord and forgetting to trust in His Word. But we come to Peter's prayer in verse 30, and I want to focus again primarily on this prayer. He says, as he was beginning to sink, Lord, save me. Lord, save me. This is Peter's shortest prayer, I'm sure. But I want you to notice the place of the prayer. This prayer was not offered in a church. It wasn't offered among the saints of God. It was not offered in a special place at His house or in His dwelling. This was offered in the midst of the sea. You know, it's good to pray with the saints. It's good to attend public worship and to take part in public prayer, or to have a special place and a special time perhaps set aside to pray to the Lord at home. But you know, that's not a requirement of prayer. Peter here prayed, Lord, save me from the middle of the sea. The mature Christian has the mentality that they can pray from anywhere and at any time. I believe that's the mature Christian's mentality. The mentality is that it's never too late to pray. You know, perhaps they should have prayed, dare I say, in fact, they should have prayed before they cast off from the shore. Before they even got out into the middle of the sea, they should have offered prayers for safe travels unto the Lord. But you know, even though they left that part off, it was not too late to pray now at this point. And certainly Peter is an example of that. In the middle of the sea, sinking in the water fast, he offers up this prayer, Lord, save me. Dear friends, let me tell you this morning that again, there's nothing in your life that is too hard for the Lord to be involved with. There's nothing too hard in your life or a task too large that He cannot undertake it. And it's never too late in whatever circumstance of life to pray to the Lord. If you have a heart to pray, doesn't matter the time or the place, if you've got a heart to pray, your Lord has an ear to hear. Let me say that this morning. It's never too late to pray unto Him. He was sinking fast here. Are you like Him today? Sometimes I feel like Him. Sometimes I just feel like I'm sinking fast. The waves are up around my waist. They're up around my neck. Never too late to pray. Never too late to pray to the Lord. You say, Brother Nathan, you just don't understand the situation that I'm dealing with and the depth to which I am now in this problem. It would be impossible for the Lord to solve. It would be humanly impossible. I've heard people say that. It'd just be humanly impossible for me to get out of this situation. Well, it's a good thing we're not praying to one that's limited to the power of man, isn't it? It's a good thing that we're not praying to one that's limited to the confines that man is. We're not praying to one to which there are things that are impossible. Look at this situation. Is it humanly possible for a person to walk on the water? Have you ever tried that? You ever gone to a pool or a public pool? You ever tried to walk on the water? I don't think that you're ever going to be able to. If you can, I'd really like to see a video of it, but I don't think you're ever going to be able to. It's humanly impossible. But dear friends, that's not an excuse to leave off prayer to the Lord, because there's nothing too hard for Him, even though it's beyond the powers and the abilities of men. I believe Peter here at this time, he probably had a natural and a sincere tone in his prayer. Think about it. He was sinking fast in the waters. He didn't have time to get all flattery with his words. He didn't have time to plan out a long discourse to the Lord. He just cried out simple three words, "Lord, save me." I believe that was probably in the most natural and the most sincere of tones. Sometimes I'm convicted of myself because I feel like, well, I'm just trying to impress the Lord with my prayers. You don't have to worry about impressing the Lord with your prayers. You can cry out even as Peter did here, "Lord, save me." Notice the brevity of this prayer. Again, it wasn't a long discourse. He didn't drone on and on. Dear friends, our prayers should not be measured by the length of the prayer, but by the content of the prayer. I believe that's what the Lord is focused on when we petition Him. Some say, well, I just don't have the time to pray. Have you ever heard somebody say that? I've said that before. I'm guilty of saying that. I just don't have the time to pray. Well, Peter's prayer here does away with that. Three little words. How long does it take to utter three little words? "Lord, save me." Those that say, "I don't have time to pray," those that have that mentality, of course you can look to the Bible and you can see that perhaps the longest prayer in the Bible was at the dedication of the temple in the Old Testament. And if you read through that prayer, it probably would only take about 5 to 6 minutes to say the longest prayer in the Bible. Most of the prayers that you find are going to be very short, even as this one here. But those that say, "I just don't have time to pray, I don't have time to approach the Lord with my problems," rather than focusing perhaps on that, they need to focus on their condition and their dependence upon the Lord. Because, dear friends, when you're focusing upon yourself as a bankrupt sinner and you're saying, "I need the Lord's help," you'll find the time to pray. You'll be driven with a great need and a desire to pray unto the Lord. But notice the brevity of this one here, just three simple words: "Lord, save me." But you know, in spite of the brevity of Peter's prayer, I believe that this is a very comprehensive prayer. And it's something that is applicable to all of life's situations. Again, just three little words: "Lord, save me." You might judge a prayer by its length. You might judge a prayer based upon the discourse of it. But I believe that even this shortest prayer of Peter was wonderfully comprehensive. It said all that it needed to say or ever could say, and it was applicable to all of his life situations, and it's applicable to all of our situations in our life. You look back at the life of Peter. Remember when Christ said that Satan desired to have him, that he might sift him as wheat? Wouldn't it have been very appropriate for Peter at that time to say, "Lord, save me"? Wouldn't that have been a very appropriate prayer at that time? "Lord, save me from this tempter." Or what about when he had denied the Lord three times and he went out and he was weeping bitterly because of that? Would it not have been completely appropriate to say at that time, "Lord, save me"? I believe it would be. Or what about when he went preaching the gospel and those enemies of the gospel were pinching him sore? Would it not have been appropriate at that time to say, "Lord, save me"? Or when they led him out to his own crucifixion and his own death because of a stand for the gospel, would it not be appropriate to say, "Lord, save me"? Do you see how it's very comprehensive and it's applicable to all of life's situations, even to us today when we deal with health issues or we deal with struggles of life? If we deal with poverty, we can say, "Lord, save me." Or even if you say, "Well, I'm not poor. I've been very blessed of the Lord and I have much of natural goods." Would not it be appropriate to say, Lord, save me at that time? Maybe save me from an attitude of covetousness. Maybe save me from attitudes that often plague the rich. Whether it's in poverty and you're dealing with the struggles of life, or you're dealing with the feelings that often come from that, perhaps jealousy of those that have been blessed of the Lord. In either situation, it would be appropriate to say, Lord, save me. Or when we're tempted of Satan or of other men, would it not be appropriate to say, Lord, save me? Or certainly when we feel far from the Lord, I think it would be. You ever felt like that? You ever felt like David as he wrote in the Psalms, how long will you forget me, Lord? Incline thine ear unto me, O Lord. You ever felt like you're just far from him? Certainly it would be appropriate then to say, Lord, save me. Draw me back closer to you. It covers a multitude of petitions. And it was a very direct prayer as well. Notice this. He got right to the immediate need, didn't he? He was sinking in the waves and sinking in the waves and the water. He just got right to the heart of the matter. And he said, Lord, save me. He didn't spout off many titles of the Lord. He didn't say, dearest Heavenly Father, creator of the universe, the most high king. He didn't go on with these titles. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I certainly don't want to discourage that this morning. Sometimes we have those titles that we call to mind because we need to remind ourselves who we're praying to. It's good to remind ourselves that we're praying to our Father. It's good to remind ourselves that we're praying to one that has all power. But it's certainly not a requirement. It's certainly not something that we should judge another person's prayer by and say, you know, they really didn't just go through all the titles as I like to do. He just went right to the heart of the matter in one simple address. Lord. One title, Lord, save me. He was very direct in his prayer. He didn't have 1,000 requests upon his mind, nor did he beat around the bush in this prayer. You say, Brother Nathan, you're being awful hard on prayer this morning. Well, it's not my intent to be hard on prayer. I'm being hard upon myself, really, because I look at this and I look at how I've neglected a life of prayer because I've forgotten how short and how direct our prayers can be. I've pushed it aside and said, you know, I just don't have time. I need to wait until I have more time to do it. And so I'm being hard upon myself because I'm guilty of these things. I have beat around the bush, as I said. Have you ever done something and just started praying to the Lord and you're not really getting to the point? You're not really asking for forgiveness for the thing that you've done. I've done that. You know, I've said, Lord, forgive me for my sharp tongue. Forgive me for my quick temper. Forgive me for being too hasty in the things that I've said or the actions that I've done. And you know, I've kind of beat around the bush saying those things. And you know what? I just never really get to the point. Lord, forgive me for yelling at my wife. Lord, I did something bad. Will you forgive me for doing that? You don't have to beat around the bush. Sometimes when you beat around the bush, by the time the prayer ends, you've explained away your action. Sometimes you've made so many excuses during your prayer that there's nothing to forgive at the end of the prayer. But you need to be very direct. It's okay to be direct and just come right out and say, Lord, forgive me for what I've done. Or in fact, you don't even have to put in that last part, for what I've done. The Lord knows what you've done. He knows all things. You could just simply say, Lord, forgive me. Or even you could say, as Peter did, Lord, save me. Save me from being the person that I don't want to be. Peter, he didn't beat around the bush, but rather he was very direct in his prayer. I think this prayer too is very doctrinally sound. Peter doesn't act like there's any hope in himself. He gives up all confidence in himself and prays from the heart, Lord, save me. He just lays it out there, Lord, I need you. I can't do it by myself. He didn't, again, lay any hope within himself that he was somehow going to rise above these waters. He was not somehow giving any credit to himself that he might be able to rescue himself. Rather, again, he laid aside all confidence in himself and had confidence only in the Lord and said, "Lord, save me." Now, I think this is a very doctrinally sound sermon. Now, this prayer didn't have anything to do with his home in heaven. Some will take this prayer and they'll equate it to what's often called the sinner's prayer. And they'll say this is a very appropriate prayer for men and women to pray so that they might be saved for heaven. But I want you to understand this morning that praying such as this, or any prayer that you might come up with, has nothing to do with your home in heaven. Do you know why? Because man by nature does not have a heart for prayer. The Adamic nature does not have a heart to pray to the Lord. Prayer, as I've said before, is the breath of a regenerate soul. It takes one that's been quickened and already made alive, made a child of God, in order to offer prayer unto the Lord. And if that wasn't enough, what is prayer? Prayer is making our request of the heart, request of our will, our desires known to the Lord. It's expressing, "Lord, this is what I want to see happen in my life." It's praying what we want to happen. It's saying, "Lord, this is my will, if it would be your will." Well, we can look back in Scripture. We can turn to Romans, we can turn to John chapter 1, we can turn to several places and see that men are not saved by their will. What does Paul say? He says that it's not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy. And John says that we were born not by the will of man. You see, prayer is the expression of our will. So how in the world could prayer save us when we're not saved according to our will? This prayer has nothing to do with Peter's home in heaven, but rather it is addressing the Lord's goodness here in time, and that he might be saved here in time. It's doctrinally sound because, yes, of course, the Lord is our salvation completely in an eternal setting, our home in heaven, if you will. But it's also doctrinally sound when it comes to our temporal salvation. It echoes that desire of David when he said, "I'll look to the hills from whence cometh my help." Or when Jonah cried out, "Salvation is of the Lord." You see, our efforts are involved here in this life. Our obedience to the Lord is involved with having a temporal salvation. But our efforts and our obedience are not to the exclusion of God's. God is still very much involved with our temporal salvation, if you will. And so we need to remember that this morning, that our efforts are not to the exclusion of him, but yet in our path of obedience and even disobedience, he shows mercy to us. You know, how many of us, as I've said before, are worthy of mercy? There's none of us here that are worthy of mercy from the Lord. But yet the Lord's mercies are new every morning, aren't they? He's very much involved with our temporal salvation, if I can use that term, just like he is in our eternal salvation. And so it's doctrinally sound because Peter's saying, "Lord, I would have nothing without you. I'm completely dependent upon you acting in my life." It was a personal prayer. He said, "Lord, save me." You know, we're supposed to pray for others. That's a biblical commandment, and I certainly encourage that this morning, that we pray for one another. But there's nothing wrong with praying for yourself either. There's nothing wrong with asking the Lord to bless you just as you ask him to help others along life's way. It's okay to pray for yourself. And notice it was not only a personal prayer, but it was an urgent prayer. Again, echoing what I've already said, that it's never too late to pray. And God's not confined to the time limits of man. You think about Peter here and how fast he sank. When you jump off a diving board, how long does it take for you to get beneath the water? As soon as your body hits the water, you're under it. I can jump off a diving board into a 10-foot pool of water, and just almost simultaneously, as soon as my feet hit the top of the water, my head's under the water. It doesn't take very long to sink underwater, just milliseconds, fractions of seconds. And that's the situation that Peter was in here. And notice that it was not too late for him to pray. How fast the Lord's arm must have moved when he was sinking fast and prayed out, "Lord, save me." How fast the Lord's arm must have got there to pull him back up. You say, that's impossible. There's nothing too hard for the Lord. I don't believe Peter was sinking slow. Sometimes you watch children's animations about this or other documentaries or something of the nature, and they kind of have Peter sinking at a very slow rate in this account. Kind of like the Wicked Witch and Wizard of Oz there at the end. I'm melting, and she's going down very slow. I don't think Peter was going down slow at all. I think he was going down according to the laws of nature. And our God is greater than the laws of nature and able to reach out just like that and pull him up out of those waters in response to his crying, "Lord, save me." It's never too late to pray unto the Lord. Notice now, finally, this morning, that this prayer was an effectual prayer. That is, it was a successful prayer. And I think that's something very important to keep in mind, not only in the context of all the things we've already mentioned, but keep in mind that this was an effectual and a successful prayer in the context of Peter's doubt, of Peter's mixed faith and doubt. It's very important to keep in mind that. You say, "Brother Nathan, well, how is that relevant to us? How is that relevant to me in my life?" Well, because we're like Peter, aren't we? We have doubt mixed with faith. We're like the man that cried unto the Lord, "Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief." We're like Peter here at this occasion. And so the comforting thing as far as noticing that it was an effectual prayer is that even though Peter had doubt in the Lord still saw fit to answer his prayer. Even though we're like Peter sometimes and we have moments of disbelief in the Lord, yet the Lord is so gracious and wonderful to us that through that doubt, he'll bless us and give us those things that we ask and stand in need of. I find that very comforting in my life. You know, sometimes I look at this and I wish I had the faith that Peter had. I wish I had his faith. You know, you look at the account here, and Peter was on a boat, and this boat was in a bad storm. And it must have been a pretty bad storm because Peter was a professional fisherman, but yet he was kind of scared of this storm. And Peter, being now on this boat in this bad storm in pitch black. This isn't like Deadliest Catch where they have big spotlights. They shine out onto the water. There's no light here. This is in the fourth watch of night. This is in the evening. There's a storm. There's no light from stars. There's no light from the moon. This is pitch black. There might have been a couple of candles burning on the ship, and that was about it. And so here's Peter on a ship in a storm, pitch black at night, and the Lord says, "Come." And he puts his foot over the edge of the ship and steps out onto the water to walk to Christ. You know, I wish I had that much faith. If the Lord said, come ahead, Nathan, come out here and meet me on this water, I'd say, "You know what? I think I changed my mind. I was just teasing. I was just funning about if that's you, tell me to come. I don't want to come out." You know, I might say, "Pick somebody else. You know, there's a lot of us on this boat. Lord, why don't you look at some of these others and ask them to come out? Or better yet, why don't you come get me? Maybe if you come take me by the hand, I'll feel a lot better about this." But Peter didn't do that, did he? Threw his legs over the ship and stepped out on that water. I wish I had that much faith. But yet, it's interesting that when Peter displayed so much faith, the Lord says, "Oh, ye of little faith." How much faith the Lord requires of us. Here he was in this situation, showing great faith and having doubts mixed with that, but yet his prayer was answered. But how much faith the Lord must require of us. But yet, what a great God we serve today. What a wondrous God that even though we have doubts mixed with faith, and He requires more faith than Peter displayed here to go out on the waters and to walk towards Christ. Even though he expects that, yet he rewards us when we're of little faith. You know, that's not motive to have less and less faith. I think that's motive to have more and more faith. That's motive to serve him more and to give him more and to give him everything that we can. But this was a very effectual prayer by Peter, even though it was just three little words, Lord save me. You know, life is hard, isn't it? You know, you look at the circumstances of life, life is hard, and I've said before that this world is no friend to the child of grace. But despite all the troubles that we have, we need to not be like Peter in a sense here, and we need to keep looking to the Lord and trusting in His Word and not doubting Him along life's way. And when you get to the point when you just feel like everything's crashing in on you and you're about to be overtaken and you're sinking fast, it's all right and it's okay to just three little words come out of your mouth, Lord, save me. There's an awful lot to learn from Peter's shortest prayer. I hope the Lord will bless you. Continue to go home and study upon that this week. Let's stand and sing a hymn this morning.